welcome to Too Much Scrolling for September 30th, 2014. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenflau.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many more wonderful ways to find new, interesting information. My favorite website to go to, and I go to it every day, is IMDb, the Internet Movie Database.
I usually find that when I'm looking for a movie.
I use it when I'm looking for any information, because all the information I need is usually about movies.
Well, usually you're going like, who is that person? I know that person, but I can't recognize that person. And you go, well, I'll look up the movie, and then you basically can follow the trail and how you know this person.
Don't you wish that Firefly feature on the Fire phone and the Fire TV, it was available on everything else so that I didn't have to buy a Fire phone?
I would.
That would be
very helpful. Maybe there's a future Android type of download for that.
Maybe Amazon has a plan like the Cylons, and they're going to release that to all the other Android devices like they're doing so well with the Kindle.
That is a good idea. I have a Kindle. I have an old school Kindle, the Reader.
Okay.
Because when you're out by the pool, reading off a tablet stinks.
And a book just won't do.
Well, you could take a book, but I usually put it in a big Ziploc bag, head out into the pool, you can get splashes on it, it doesn't really matter. You can read through it, it's an easy, fun thing to do, my friend.
There you go. Brings us to our film at 11 this week. We've gone back into the archives, and we haven't talked about the movie Her, which was released in January 2014, so that's our movie of the week.
That's right. We're going to go back in time. And we're going to talk about this movie, which makes a nice bookend to this summer's movie, Lucy, which also starred Scarlett Johansson and had a similar enough premise, but a different type of twist on it. Okay. So Lucy was a very good film. I enjoyed that this summer. I think I remember saying that I thought it had big ideas in it. But maybe fell a little bit flat, but still I would recommend seeing Lucy.
And of course Her has some huge ideas in it about where we're going with our society. This society that we've built with everybody with their smartphones in their hand, communicating with nothing but the computer and not being able to communicate together with other humans.
I think that this is a very good film. I truly enjoyed it. There are parts that you may have. If I had feelings, maybe I could cry in it. But I don't have feelings. But it takes place in a time that's not too far in the future. All these sets that are that they use, the clothing they use, tells you it's not today. But it's certainly, you know, a leap 10 years in the future, a leap 20 years in the future. It certainly isn't that far ahead of us. And when you see about the operating systems running on computers, you're starting to see a little bit of the ideas that are addressed in this movie kind of pop up here and there. The premise of this movie is we have our hero, Theodore, who's played by Joaquin Phoenix, who's a very good actor. Basically, he's got a very interesting job.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of his job is you want to write a letter, a heartfelt letter, to your wife, to your girlfriend, to your children, to an associate. Maybe somebody did something at work that you really liked. So you hire his firm, and he's the guy that writes these wonderful letters to you. Like, you know, every time you walk into the house, your eyes sparkle. It lifts my day. It truly makes me a better person. Yeah. All these wonderful things that you would say, well, he's writing Hallmark. But
and that's the bleak existence. The starting of this movie is we, the community of people, we don't know how to communicate with each other. We don't know how to say these words. We have to hire somebody through the internet, much less. Not even calling them on the phone, God forbid. Uh-huh. You hire these people to say these words for you.
And they just haven't been, this is not a one-time thing. He has years, like he knows the couple that's hired him. He knows them for 10 years worth of service. There was a letter at the beginning where he talks about a lady's crooked tooth that, you know, obviously attracts the husband to his wife or something. Well, the order doesn't mention anything about that. And they say, well, how did you know that? Oh, because I've been writing these letters for him for, you know, 10 years.
Wow.
I know this. So, you know, there's a disconnect there. But it also shows that, you know, maybe society is unsure of their own way of interacting with people. And they feel that they have to hire a professional to do that. What we learn about Joaquin's character, Theodore, is that his wife has left him. And they have been split for almost a year now, but they still haven't finalized this divorce. So this sets up this melancholy feel that Theodore has. He's writing these letters.
Love letters that he isn't involved in the relationship.
Sure, and he is sort of having all these emotions and this disconnect to the world that he once knew, this person that he had created a life with. And so one of his solutions is to basically buy a new operating system, and that's there's our beginning of our story.
Right, and this operating system is special because it has a true person personality, kind right. of what Steve Jobs wanted to make with the Macintosh, the idea of a personal computer that, well, spoke to you at the keynote.
Okay, and not just spoke to you. Basically was your cheerleader, was your, you know, person empathized with you. When the software initially comes up, they introduce each other, and she makes up the name. This is Scarlett Johansson's character. She's the voice. Mm-hmm. You don't ever get to see her, but she's the voice, and she takes the name Samantha, and Joaquin Theodore basically asks, well, how did you come up with Samantha? And she said, well, I looked through a book on babies' names, and I felt that was the best name.
Wow.
So she picked the name Samantha, and they started having a relationship. The initial things that she asked to do was to be able to go through his computer files, his private files, and organize them. And he said, well, sure, I'll do that. And when she did that, she was able to clean up the hard drive, delete a bunch of old stuff out of his life that basically was crowding up his life.
As a new girlfriend might do, moving
sure.
into your space.
Sure, and keep the important highlights, but get rid of the things that don't matter. And they started creating this relationship. Now, initially, it's a relationship that is of an operating system with a master, with a person. But slowly, it gets deeper and deeper, and it becomes much more of an emotional connection. This operating system, as the film progresses, is creating, although not real, is creating all of the emotions and all of the feelings of a real entity. And that's part of what this this movie starts to address, is what is a real being. There's a number of high level thoughts that you're going to have when you're watching this. Now, part of this, you will eventually come to have other thoughts to say, is he disconnecting from reality to join this artificial reality?
And then the second question is, are we doing that today with all of us walking around with our smartphones, the number of people walking down the street not looking at anything other than that stupid screen in their hand?
Well, it's if you've ever been around a group of people that have been alcoholics or may have been addicted to some kind of drug or had ever been through a cult type of situation or, you know, any type of thing that that we may not think as being a positive experience, you know, when you can't control what you're doing, that's the immediate thing that you start feeling for Theodore, Joaquin's character. Is he experiencing this? It's not the overriding feeling of this. You're going for the ride of the movie, but there's always that thought. Has he disconnected from living to be with this person? But what we find is that throughout the movie that he is, you cannot lie to an operating system. So you have to be very clear on what your feelings are, what you're trying to accomplish. And so we see there's growth in Theodore's character throughout this entire movie. One of the interesting parts of this movie is that at some point he's got to tell his friends that he's dating his operating system. And I don't mean to, I'm not trying to give away the movie, and I'm obviously giving away a number of parts.
I think we're outside of the spoiler zone at this point. The movie came out in January. It's okay. Almost October. It'll be October tomorrow.
Okay, so he's dating his operating system, and he refers to her as his girlfriend. He goes on a double date with people with this operating system.
With his great Bluetooth headset in his ear. And Motorola, of course, has released their version of that Moto Hint as a in-ear system that will work with your Motorola phone and give you that experience very similar to her.
So if we had to describe how it looks, it would be like an earplug.
Mm-hmm.
Like a colored, they use a white one that goes into one side of your ear, and that's how they connect. And yeah, that's
the
how
hint
they talk.
Is actually black in color or silverish. I'll put the pictures in the show notes, but it is that device so that you can communicate with your phone no matter where you're at, no matter what you're doing.
Now, I also want to mention that this is an adult story. Mm-hmm. This is not a family story. There are a number of things that happen in this story where we are talking about adult ideas. Now, I don't want to scare anybody away from that, but you know, when you're dealing with an operating system and there's potential sex involved, when you're dealing with an operating system and some of the scenes that kind of he deals with, these are ideas that are out there right now, but they haven't really. You may never have had them articulated to you, and so I think this there's a very future way of looking at this movie that is very realistic. I could easily see many of the ways that we have things happen to us work very similar to us.
It's another one of those allegories. This movie is about the future, but it's about the current set of values and what we're doing with technology and how we're getting addicted to some of that technology. There's so many technologies now that are mimicking the good parts of her. Mm-hmm. Cortana is such a beautiful voice coming out of your Windows phone. Those of you who have a Windows phone, yes, you. And that's the idea, is your operating system can be that emotional tie to this piece of plastic and glass that you want to pay somebody else $200 for.
Sure. Let me mention a couple other things that I noticed in the film. His house is a nice home, but it's certainly, you can see that when I say neglected, I'm not talking about being dirty. I'm talking about like a lampshade being off-kiltered, that the it's sparsely decorated. I'm seeing that there's a number of things going on. So this living with the operating system doesn't mean that he's not going for strolls out in the park or anything like that. But there are parts of his life that are being neglected, and they're shown in around this. There's also, this has Amy Adams. Let me just go ahead and say Amy Adams. That usually means it's a great film for me.
There you go.
If you know, I love Amy Adams. And anyway, Amy Adams character, Amy, has a relationship with her husband, and they end up splitting up also.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason they're splitting up is the reason why the operating system, Samantha, and Theodore have such a strong relationship. It's the supportive nature of how they communicate with each other. It's the truthfulness on how they communicate with each other. And it's a very positive relationship. Later on, we find out, or we learn, that Amy has a similar relationship with her operating system.
Mm.
So after her husband leaves, she has that, and we learn there's all sorts of other people who are having those too.
Hmm.
There is an ending to this. I won't give all that away, even though I've talked about a lot about this movie. I think this is a very good movie to explore ideas And I highly recommend it. This is a good movie.
Very similar to a lot of the other Spike Jonze movies. One of my favorites is Where the Wild Things Are. That's a great way to look at your childhood and all of those parts that make up a child, and bringing them out into an embodiment of that in a monster form. Again, not a children's movie. Her is not a family movie.
Where the Wild Things was
a children's book
was advertised for families.
Yeah,
and it didn't do well.
I don't.
No, I think it did well. I don't think it did on the level they thought it could do.
Right. It's a lot deeper, and maybe it's because I'm a father and I'm looking at it from a perspective of no longer being a boy, looking at it as a father of boys, and going, yeah. That's you, boy.
Well, there's also Being John Malkovich, which came out in 1999.
Right.
That was a long time ago.
Yes, it was.
Spike Jonze only has a few films.
And they all have that Spike Jonze feel. We know that it's a Spike Jonze film. We should expect certain things from it. It's not going to be a normal romantic comedy. Spike Jonze doesn't make those.
No, there was an odd... No, I highly recommend Being John Malkovich too.
Mm-hmm.
But it truly is an odd, maybe a little intellectual twist to it. Her didn't have the oddness to it.
It's pretty odd.
Well, it's being John Malkovich, you're basically living in his head,
mm-hmm.
which is really
very, very out there.
Okay, yeah. And this when I say. Her is a cautionary tale. I don't think he's saying that this was a bad experience for Theodore or for Amy. I think what it ultimately comes down to is finding a cleaner way of connecting to the human people around you. And you could say, well, it's being true or being real or however you want to say it, but it's not, it's being very supportive. It's using the right words. It's all the things that we want to do that, you know, life comes in the way and all of a sudden you've answered too quickly or you didn't give the right look when you're trying to say something or you may have answered something dismissively where you didn't really mean it on that level, but they didn't realize you had 10 things in your head at the same time and they caught you at that very moment where you were having, you know, the most important revelation that could have solved the universe.
And he got distracted by Fruit Loops again. That's what happens to me. Fruit Loops again. Brings us to our appetite segment. Speaking of appetite, our app of the week this week is Tiny, which is a brand new app, came out last week. It's designed by Kevin Rose. Kevin Rose, of course, is a venture capitalist now with Google, but before that, he was well known in circles for his computing and for his, broadcast skills. So is somebody that I look up to. Tiny is a new concept app. It's kind of like Instagram.
Okay.
It's kind of like Snapchat. It's kind of like Twitter. What you do is you take snaps, photographs, and they are very small 1-inch square photographs on your screen. So the screen is filled with 12 photographs at any given time. Those photographs can be still pictures or they can be a 6-second video, so it's kind of like Vine.
Okay.
But the twist is these pictures disappear after 24 hours. There's no way to collect them off of the screen like you can with Snapchat. Okay. You can take a screenshot, but you're getting a screenshot of 12 1-inch squares. You cannot enlarge your 1-inch square that you want to capture. So there's probably no reason to capture a 12.
Well, I'm trying to think of how this could be used. And you know, I'm going to use the first kickoff of the NFL season, mm-hmm. that type of thing. Maybe the NFL puts something out showing the kickoff, or maybe a highlight. The Macy's parade during Thanksgiving, or something. Santa arrives, or maybe it's at your homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Where they announce the winner or something of that nature. It just seems. The uses of this, the idea behind it seems interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The uses of it will kind of arrive over time. My children use Vine, and they use it for to discover the latest Shawn Mendes, or for the 6 second video, music video, I think is what they are. This seems like that's somebody's going to figure out how to make this useful to us.
Oh, I think somebody will figure it out real quick. Again, Kevin Rose is a venture capitalist. That's what he does, is figure out the next new thing. And this really falls into that genre that we're in right now, kind of like a Web 3.0, where we collectively, the users of the internet, we have decided that some things are not forever, that we should be able to keep certain memories on the internet forever, and certain things should go away after a very short period of time.
I mean, use the example of this week there was an article that came out, a young woman who was posting Twitter. Maybe her father was a sheriff or something. He had gotten her out of a few tight spots. And then that came back to bite her, because I think she was arrested for something else. But anyway, all the things she posted on Twitter in the past all of a sudden were brought to light. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm an older person. I'm almost 23 years old now, right? And so I recognize that if I'm not willing to go out into the corner and scream out something at the top of my lungs, I probably don't want to put it online mm-hmm. for everyone to see.
Right.
But a young person may not have, they're young people. They put things on that maybe totally would embarrass them later on.
And the European courts have said that there is a right to be forgotten, that people posting something that's embarrassing or inaccurate or slanderous even, mm-hmm. they should have the right to remove that from the internet. And
people change ideas. I mean, they come out and they say that they're against war. Mm-hmm. I would never get in a war. And, and they get a peace prize. And mm-hmm. then the next few years later, they're bombing another country,
No new taxes.
Exactly. Right. Not to get political on anything. But what the point is that we may have strong opinions of things at the time when we don't have all the information.
And we might change our minds.
Correct. In fact, as you get older, you tend to reserve your comments on something until later, because you recognize you don't have all the information.
Right.
And then later, when you're young, you're much more, when I say you're young, when you're inexperienced, maybe you're not as mature, you become much more reactionary, and you tend to jump areas that you probably don't want to be in.
That's right.
Something on the internet is wrong.
We have to stop it immediately. Brings us to our book it of the week, our book this week. I've decided, we're going back into the archives for her. We might as well go back in the archives and talk about Ready Player One, which was published in 2001, written by Ernest Cline. A film adaptation is underway. It's
really
happening. Zach Penn, who wrote the X-Men movie,
uh-huh.
is working on the storyline for a screenplay to make Ready Player One into a movie, and I think it's going to be great.
Well, this sounds like a very interesting movie.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like an interesting book. I did see that the audiobook was read by Will Wheaton.
That's right. Wheaton did
tell
the audiobook.
So tell us a little bit about this book and how why that is a special surprise.
Well, Ready Player One is the kind of distant future, the year 2045.
It's a distant future, the year 2000.
Right. 2045, there's this hyper-realistic 3D video game called The Oasis, and a lot of people are playing this video game. They're immersed in this hyper-realistic 3D world.
Is this World of Warcraft at
yes.
the time? Or Call of Duty of
yes.
the time? Okay.
Or Minecraft of the time.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
It's that game that so many people are a part of, and they're living their lives. It's kind of a second life.
Okay.
That's a video game too, by the way.
Well, what you're basically saying is that you have your real life,
mm-hmm.
and then you have your fantasy life.
Right.
And you're everything that you want to be, or you're trying to be everything you want to be.
Yeah, it kind of fits in with the movie Her. The idea that I am not great at communicating. My life is not great. I'm living in this dystopic world where things have gone wrong, but I can retreat to this digital world where things are perfect, where things are wonderful, where I am popular amongst this group of people. My podcast is being listened to by thousands of people. The story goes on in this fantasy world. The players are playing 80s video games. That's okay. What they do. That's the Ready Player One, is they are playing these video games and they're trying to unlock the secrets of a mystery in the real world. And it's a huge worldwide mission to find an Easter egg hidden inside the Oasis, put there by a maniacal computer programmer who wants to unify the world, really.
Okay.
It's a great story.
Is it?
It's going to make a great movie, and Zach Penn is the right person to write the screenplay.
Okay. Well, this sounds like a fascinating type of book.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the payoff on this story?
Well, I don't want to ruin the story.
Oh, come on.
But I can tell the Will Wheaton part.
Tell me the Will Wheaton part.
Will Wheaton is mentioned in this story, along with so many other pop culture references. Not only Will Wheaton in Star Trek The Next Generation, but the Monty Python and the Holy Grail. All sorts of games like Tempest and Pac-Man are mentioned. Schoolhouse Rock is in there. This is a book written as a nostalgia point for people of my generation.
Okay.
And Will Wheaton is mentioned in there as somebody to look up to, and he goes ahead and reads the audiobook.
I'm thinking that the best reference I'm aware of this summer was Guardians of the Galaxy,
mm-hmm.
when Chris Platt's character is standing with the lady, and he talks about a great warrior, and the great warrior in Footloose.
That's right. I think Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be one of those movies that's going to go on for a while.
I have a feeling that our kids are going to be... No, I have girls, so it's a little bit different. But boys will be quoting it. It will be a one that will get watched many, many times.
I think so. So we get on to our news segment. Lots of stuff happening in the news this week. The iPhone 6 Plus that came out the week before. Well, if you sit on it, it's made of aluminum, and it's really thin, and a lot of people have found that the thing will bend like a taco in your pocket.
Well, a lot of people know I like skinny jeans, and I wear them all the time. And when I'm wearing a great big, hand-sized phone, and I want to put it in my pocket,
mm-hmm.
it just seems like that it is ripe to bend.
There's some really damning evidence out there. The guy took his iPhone 6 Plus and took his four fingers and bent that thing. It was painful to watch.
Well, think about it. Pockets are a tight spot.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting on something that's that thin. These phones have gotten thin because we've demanded
that's right.
for them to get thin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you could see that there's a challenge there. So maybe there's a warning label on them, not to put them in your pocket.
Maybe I hold on to my 5S for a while, because my 5S, I've sat on it every day since I got it, no problem. I've got my Nexus 7 in my other pocket. That's never bent like that. That video was hard to watch.
Well, I wear suits, and I usually throw in my phone sits mm-hmm. in my pocket all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't have I've never had an issue with it. But the 6S or 6 Plus.
6 Plus.
6 Plus really doesn't have any interest to me. It may have an interest to my wife, but it wouldn't have an interest to me. It's just too big. If I'm going to go that big, I'm going to go ahead and get a tablet.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I carry the Nexus 7 and the Apple iPhone 5S. It's mm-hmm. a great combination of things. Speaking of a great combination of things, AT&T is offering high-speed internet, HBO, and Amazon Prime for $40 a month.
That's it. How fast is the internet?
It's fast enough.
Okay.
It's AT&T. It's pretty quick.
Well, Amazon Prime mm-hmm. is, I think it's $129 a year now.
Right, so it's about $10 a month.
Okay, and we also, internet can be $40 or $50 a month, mm-hmm. depending on what you get. You throw in a little HBO on there.
That's usually about $15 a month.
So this seems like a pretty good deal. If you were a young person or a family and you wanted to you know, get these services, you throw on a Hulu or throw on a you know, Netflix or something like that. Well, I'm sorry, you don't need to do that. You have Amazon Prime.
That's right.
So this is a great deal.
I think it's a great deal. It's really tempting for me. I'm a cord cutter. I don't have cable TV.
And you use Roku.
And I use Roku.
Ah.
We've done the math. $40 a month. Of course, it's AT&T, so that $40 a month is an introductory 12-month deal.
They're all these times. I mean, as far as these types of deals, they all are 12 months, and then you call back, and you have to determine whether to keep them or not.
Right.
But to be able to bundle them like that for $40 a month. Now, are they using, is this running over DSL lines?
All of AT&T is DSL still. Even when they're going fiber to your box, from your box to you is still DSL. So,
really?
Yeah, but it works. You've been working with AT&T for a while.
I've got UVerse. I got 45 megabyte per second. So, I mean, that certainly I'm not the fastest guy in the world. I know Comcast has one plan. I think it's $2.99 or $3.99 a month, and you know, it's like 300 megabytes per second. And then they have another tier that was like 100 megabytes per second.
It's like living in Taiwan.
I'm telling you. Google Fiber should really look at coming to our area. I just want to mention that right now, if they hear me.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure they're listening.
Our fiber our fiber needs to be fixed. There's something wrong with our fiber connection.
But, I mean, we've got pretty good speed in our area. We have a cable company offering 50 megabytes per second. We have UVerse offering 45 megabytes per second as our top tier. I mean, we certainly aren't craving for speed. I mean, we
not as much as we were a few years ago before those lines were laid, that's for sure. Later today, Windows, Microsoft, is going to be announcing something, and we're pretty sure that it's going to be an announcement about what Windows 9 is going to look like.
Interesting.
A little bit exciting. The world is waiting for Windows 9. The world looked at Windows 8 and just rejected it like Yahoo Sirius.
Well, I'm the only person that I shouldn't say I'm the only person. I'm one of, what, 6% of the population?
Well, let's see. The numbers for July, Windows 8 is running on about 12% of computers around the world.
All right, so let me go ahead and say this part. I had Windows 8 the day they released it. I downloaded it and put it on my laptop.
In 2012.
That's right. I have a legacy laptop. This certainly isn't the most modern of computers, but I have run Windows 8. It doesn't have a touch screen on it. I know how to work the tiles. I know how to work, get to the main screen that we're all familiar with. Windows 8, for me, has worked exactly the way I wanted it to.
You are a rare breed, Chip.
And I say that because I'm impressed by it. Now, I'm really shocked that so many people rejected it, but I think they rejected it because initially it came up to that tile screen, and it freaked people out.
I agree.
And they in one of the conversations we've had in the past is concerning how Apple does such a great job at training their customers on how to use their operating system.
Mm-hmm.
If you live near an Apple store and you bought an Apple computer, you can sign up for classes. You go in, they'll teach you how to edit photos. They'll teach you how to work their word processing system. They'll teach you how to do all the things that you want to do on your computer. In the past, Windows basically gave away their operating system at the best price. They took 95% of the population of the computer using population uses Windows. So we have Word and we have Excel and we have PowerPoint and we have Outlook and all these other programs. They were given to us, but when they never really trained us how to use them, so we pigeoned our way through. We can kind of do some stuff. Well, as soon as they switched to Windows 8, which is a nice system, in my opinion, the weakness became very apparent. Because you pigeoned your way through this, you kind of know how to do some stuff. When you were thrown into a system where maybe you had to use the right tool to get there, like the Windows button that's on your keyboard that nobody ever uses?
There's a Windows button on my keyboard?
Exactly.
I've been teaching Windows in school for 12 years. Every new class, I have the kids look down at the keyboard and find the Windows key. And every time, more than half the class goes, "There's a Windows key? When did we get that?"
Just now. Just now. Well, I think that this, the weakness of Windows was, once again, that they didn't train us how to use their operating system as cleanly as they could have. They have tried to rectify it. If you go to, in many big cities, there are Windows stores, very, very similar to, they're trying to replicate the success of the Apple Store, which is the store that has the highest per square unit sales of any store. So these are places, Macy's and Nordstrom's would just, they would kill for it, but they would really want to have these types of sales per square foot. Well, Windows is trying to replicate that. We'll see if it happens. The adoption was so poor. The gentleman who created Windows 8 was the person who came in and put together Windows 7, which saved Vista. Basically, it was the version, I guess the previous version, we had Windows 8, Windows 7, and we had Vista. Came in and took this elephant of a program, slimmed it down, and made it Windows 7, which is a very good operating system, mm-hmm. too. And he was promptly fired because he put together Windows 8.
That's right.
He left, like, right afterwards.
Windows 8 is really not selling well, really not giving Microsoft a good gold star in the community. It's kind of very similar to what happened to Microsoft Office in 2010 when they introduced the ribbons to mm-hmm. Microsoft Office. Again, we had taught ourselves how things work. File, edit, view. That's how things work. And the moment that they change from what we know, the community panics and goes,
Well, I still use Microsoft on my business computer. We use 2007, Office 2007.
Without the ribbons.
Yeah, we didn't upgrade from that.
Okay.
For my personal Windows computer, I still use 2007. I could see, I don't understand why someone would have to upgrade. I mean, there are some bells and whistles that come through things,
mm-hmm.
but maybe it's not enough to prompt me to do that. And you can easily see where if you're using an Apple computer and you're using Numbers, which is not as good as Excel,
right.
I'll go ahead and mention that. But Pages is as good as Word,
mm-hmm.
and if you use Google Docs, they've got a version of Excel, they've got a version of Word,
which again are not as good, are not as robust a program, doesn't have all the tools that you need, but it's a very basic and usable system. And the nice thing about Google Docs is it's everywhere you're at, and the collaboration that you can do between people. You can put show notes for a podcast on there, and you can have them accessible to the world. I'll do that.
So what we're finding is that all the Windows operating system and their software is incredibly is capable.
Mm-hmm.
Windows introduced their Surface tablet, the first generation, and they wanted to sell it at a premium, mm-hmm. and it did not sell. Shortly after, they came out with their second version, and mm-hmm. now they're on their third version of their Surface tablet.
I've heard that the third one is really good, that I really should investigate getting a Surface tablet. That there's a lot of people that really like the third version. It's really coming into its own.
All right, so if you were looking at getting a laptop, I would say that looking, and you wanted to stay in the Windows world, mm-hmm. probably getting a Surface would definitely be something that I would consider.
Mm-hmm.
And my idea would be that you have this, they have like a keyboard that comes with, it's usually a colored keyboard. All right, so that's when you're out and you're heading, you know, to a business meeting, you're heading to the coffee shop, whatever you wanted to. But you get home, I would plug it into a regular keyboard. I'd plug it into a regular screen. And so you would have your traditional computer look and power. Mm-hmm. And it would have a better keyboard and all that other fun stuff you'd want it to do. my assumption is my next business computer, because we're required to work on the Windows world, will be a Surface. I would see that that would be
the next logical step for you.
Yeah, because we need some power. But I don't need the power of the machines. I mean, that maybe one of the new areas we're moving into is buying the right amount of power. Mm-hmm. You know, do you need a stereo that's like 3,000 watts of power? Or do you want the thing that has 50?
That's all you need.
Because that's all I need.
There you go.
And so with computers, it could be the same thing, where Apple has the Mac Pro. It looks like a little rocket ship that sits there. And, I mean, it's enough to power an entire office.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need that much power.
No, and nor could you afford it.
Okay.
That's a ridiculously expensive piece of hardware.
But you know, does it start off at $2,000, right?
For the basics, and you don't even want that, because that won't do enough compared to what it could do for $5,000.
Okay, but what I'm saying is it could run an entire office for the $5,000. Now, $5,000 is a lot of money, and it's more money than most people want to put on their home computer.
Right.
But if you could do it, I mean, it's in the, if it was something you want to do in your life, many people could purchase it. You know, they could not take a vacation or whatever they had to do. Not eat for a year something.
We could all just, come on, kids, sit around the Mac Pro. I'll tell you stories about when we used to go on vacation.
That's right. We were going to eat this month. we were going to replace the automobile, but we're not going to now. But, you know, people have different priorities, right? But, you know, you may only need the power of a laptop or of an entry level laptop
or a Chromebook
or a Chromebook. $200
appliance to get on the internet. If that's all you're going to do, you don't need any more than that. And we're at the stage now where we can identify this is enough. Maybe the smartphone.
We have to be careful, though, when we start mentioning Chromebooks and stuff like that. When somebody purchases a Chromebook, it typically is a secondary computer to another computer you would have.
True enough.
Most people, maybe they'll pick a MacBook Air up or an entry-level PC with Windows on it, and it would probably work for almost everything they would need.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay.
All right, Chip. I think we've gotten enough information. I think we have all the information we need to survive another week. What do you think?
Do you think we can survive?
I think we're okay.
Oh,
I think
excellent.
I think it's October tomorrow. The sun's going down a little bit faster, and boy, it's getting cold.
Is this the time when all the owls come out and black cats?
Owls and black cats and all sorts of things that go bump in the night. I think we're going to have to start our special month, our favorite month, and talk about some scary things next week.
I'll start dressing like a scarecrow.
All right. There we go. I hope we have enough information. I hope you guys enjoyed all of the fun that we had today. If you need more information, you can reach us on our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. You can email us at TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You can go and look at our Instagram and our Tiny. It's so much fun.
Oh, this is great. This is great.
I love it.
Thank you for listening to us.
Yeah, thank you for all those people who have tuned in. We've gotten so many listeners. Thank you all. I hope you'll be back here next Tuesday. Thanks for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Messenfluck.
See you in the future.